Tab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I am Eric.
And I am Dennis.
And that's Dennis Hallinan. He's one of the employee owners at Tab. Comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. And we have tons of time now, thanks to GoNetSpeed. No mid-hour breaks. So feel free to get online, or mid-half hour, I should say. 860-522-9842 is the number. And we'll do our best to take your computer comments, questions, and concerns and help you out with your technology issues. We're here on this nice cloudy Saturday, so get online and we'll do our best to help you out. Speaking of clouds.
Clouds?
Yeah. What do you got going on with the news there, Dennis? You got something you want to talk about?
We mentioned the CDK cyber attack, and that affects a lot of dealerships because
15,000.
Because they host the productivity application for a lot of car dealerships and truck dealerships.
Yep.
And CDK themselves hadn't been too forthcoming about exactly what happened.
No.
We just know that they shut down everything.
Right. But as we predicted last Saturday, it was a ransomware attack.
It turns out that it was a ransomware attack.
You don't have to be the sharpest tool to predict that.
Yeah, I mean, come on, guys. Yeah. I mean, who are you fooling?
Right.
Just tell us.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like the cops when they stop you. You know, be honest about what's in your car. And then everything will be better.
Right.
Well, why don't you just tell us that you were ransomed, guys? Come on.
Yeah, and they paid.
Just say it.
And they paid.
They paid. And now apparently they're in the process of decrypting all their systems.
Right. So just to understand this whole thought of the cloud, right? 15,000 dealerships, put their dealers, their whole dealerships in the hands of their dealership software company. Just so you know, there's more than one dealership software company out there. You don't have to do it this way.
Right.
But 15,000 dealerships chose to, instead of having CDK on their systems in their four walls, on-prem, as it used to be called. Actually, it's still called that. They chose to put it and rent it in the cloud with CDK. Why? Because it's going to be, of course, more secure and better and faster and updated. Yeah, yada, yada, yada.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Great idea, right?
Yeah, great idea. So the thing is, now if you think about this, so CDK gets ransomed. Now, how many servers do you think it takes to host 15,000 dealerships? Well, it could take hundreds of servers.
At least hundreds.
And these servers are not necessarily on-prem at CDK.
Right.
They are in some data centers all over the country, right? Because CDK decided, of course, if you're a smart company to put their dealer, you put the data centers in East Coast, West Coast, and you have this elasticity going back and forth and making sure everything's up to date. And of course, the ransomware said, I'm going to go from the East Coast to the West Coast. All good.
Right.
So now you got to touch all these servers, these physical servers, hundreds of physical servers running all these instances of CDK for your dealership, your Volkswagen dealership, your whatever, Bob's Volkswagens is sitting there in some dealer, in some data center and Oshkosh, who knows? And now CDK has to run the decryption software to get Bob's Volkswagen dealership running again.
Right. And
across thousands of systems.
Right. And how well is that decryption software going
to
work?
Yeah, they don't write that to be the best stuff.
No, I mean, when the bad guys are writing the software, they write the
encryption
software to be good and fast.
Yeah.
They don't really care too much about the decryption end. They just kind of scrabble something together and shove it out for people.
Right. So you think about disaster recovery. I'm sure when they sold the systems to the dealerships, they talked about their disaster recovery technology and how if you had a problem, we'd get you back up and running. But they don't ever consider all of it going down
at one time.
But if you listened to this show for the past decade, you would have considered that.
Right, because you would have known that it happens.
Yeah, it happens constantly. I mean, look at Final Sight here in Connecticut. That's a Glastonbury company. They put all their sites on the Google Cloud, which talks about rapid recovery. Well, for 5,000 sites, it takes forever to rapidly recover that.
Yeah, it's a ton of data.
Yeah, so same idea, the thought of the cloud, it's all your eggs in one basket, and CDK dropped the basket. Now, when we were kids, that was like the saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket, Eric. Okay. That's what you're doing when you put it in the cloud. You've got all your eggs. If you can't see that right now, 15,000, all the dealerships went down, all the eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. So the idea that people are still doing this and not looking at the contrarian approach to this approach and saying to themselves, well, do I want to be beholden to my dealership management system? Maybe I want to put, maybe you like CDK, fine, put it on your servers right. inside your building, and guess what? You would have been one of the, you would have been running while 14,999 of them would have been down.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say is, I mean, even if you have your own premise server.
Right.
And, it, I mean, God forbid it gets encrypted.
Right. It can happen.
It's in your control and you can get it back.
Restore
one. Assuming you backed it up and everything and right. you have a good backup and you know that it works.
Right.
You can be back in business in lot less time
right.
than it's going to take CDK to restore 15,000 businesses.
Right. So that's the thing that you're not thinking about when you go into this cloud approach. You're literally stuffed in this tenement building in the sky, as I call it, somebody else's servers. And when the thing blows up, the whole building blows up.
Right.
And now you got to put it back together.
Right. And now instead of being buried in a house's worth of rubble,
right.
you are buried in a skyscraper's worth.
Exactly.
And how are you going to extricate yourself? You can't.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with people's decisions when it comes to these things. And just so you know, it's not just – this has just happened to be the dealership software. We've talked about ransomware that happened to cancer software out there. Mosaic Systems went down, right?
Yep.
They were impacted. All sorts of hospitals here in Connecticut were impacted to the point where this company, Electic or something like that, Electa, I think they were called.
Electa.
Yeah, they were running out servers, on-prem servers to get people back up and running. How ironic is that? Because they were ransomed. The whole thing was ransomed. A little more news about CDK. The CDK cyber attack outage could lead to 100,000 fewer cars sold in June.
100,000?
According to experts. You know how the experts are, though. Take it with a grain of salt. The experts say 100,000 less cars. So, of course, you might miss your numbers, which means you might miss your incentives. You might miss your bonuses.
Right. Yeah, because June 30th is tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'll bet a lot of those dealers have a deadline of 6:30 to meet, you know, certain numbers.
Yeah.
And so they're going to miss out on that.
Yep. Because I don't think the manufacturers care which software you chose.
Obviously, they don't. They're not going to just say, "Oh, you guys had a problem. We'll pay you something anyway." No, yeah. It's not going to happen.
Probably not. So we'll put this link up here for you. You can take a look at it. It just, again, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at this model, this cloud model, and see over and over and over and over again this issue occurring. Whether you're using dental software, cancer software, dealership software, you name it, when you stick it out in somebody else's cloud, you lost control of your destiny. You now are beholden to this provider of software. Does that make a whole lot of sense? So we'll put the link up. You guys can read it. What else you got, Dennis?
Well, this week out on the Facebook group, we had a little bit of discussion about local accounts versus Microsoft accounts on Windows 11 computers.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. Big issue.
And Microsoft used to have an article that would tell you exactly how to take your Microsoft account and create a new local account and use that. Well, Tom's Hardware reports that tech support article has been redacted.
Oh, geez.
And they no longer explain to you how to create the local account.
Thanks, Microsoft.
Because they don't want people using local accounts to log in. They want you using that MSO account.
Right. Connected to the interwebs.
Yeah. Because they want everything linked up with their cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we have the issue of the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
But they want you linked up with them so that they have your stuff in addition to you.
Right.
And they're making it harder. And this is something that I've been saying it for a long time. Eventually, it's going to reach the point where you can't log into a computer with a local account.
Right. You must check in.
At least on the consumer side. On the business side, they're going to have to make domain accounts and things like that available.
Right.
But eventually, I don't even think Windows is ever going to even have a local account capacity. Maybe 10 years from now, 15.
Yeah.
That's just the way it's going to be. And one of the problems with that tech support article, even before Microsoft chopped it, is that it didn't tell you how to take the Windows profile that's attached to that Microsoft account on the computer and port all of that data to this new local account that they used to tell you how to create but won't anymore.
Right.
Okay. That is something that Microsoft, they stuck a stick in the spokes of that wheel several years ago when they stopped putting what they call Migration Wizard into Windows.
Yep.
It died with Windows 7.
Hmm.
At any rate, all you're doing, even if you had had access to that article and were doing what was in it,
yeah,
all you were doing was just creating a brand new local account with nothing in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you do? Where's you have all these documents. Where are they? Well, they're on the computer. You just have to dive for them. Or you have to use third-party software to migrate that profile to the new one.
Right. And you want to talk about the software that's out there for that?
Yeah. There's a product called PC Mover.
Oh, yeah.
And it's by a company called Laplink.
Mm-hmm.
And Laplink is an old thing for us. And it was great in its day, but they've kind of moved on to other products, and this is one of them. It will take that old profile and copy it to the new one, and there might be a couple of extra steps in there to do it, but you can do it.
If you can figure out how to do what Microsoft removed to tell you how to do it.
Right. You have to still have to create the local account. But it's getting to be a very bad situation.
Yeah.
And on top of that...
Yeah.
On top of that, we're still talking about Windows 11, folks.
Yeah.
They have changed what they call the out-of-box experience, or OOBE.
They've changed the out-of-box experience.
And that's when you power up a brand-new computer for the first time.
Yes.
And it sets up Windows.
Okay.
All right?
Generally, you have your fingers crossed.
Yes. Now... some of you will remember this, and there's a lot of questions that get asked and all that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the questions used to be, would you like to set up OneDrive syncing with your data?
Right.
And you that they called backing up your computer, which
is not
a backup.
Backing up. No.
At any rate, they would ask you if you wanted to sync the data.
Mm-hmm. Now they just
there
do
is
it.
No ask anymore.
They just do it.
It just happens. And apparently it happens completely invisibly. They don't even tell you that they're doing it.
They're sucking the data.
They don't even put on the screen, we are going to sync OneDrive with your data. No, it's not there.
Wow. We're going to
And as a matter of fact, our correspondent on the Facebook group had that happen to him.
Yep.
And I hadn't even been aware of that. I just thought maybe there was something funny about the wizard where maybe he clicked an option to not sync, but... however it was worded, it synced anyway.
Yep.
Because Microsoft's been doing that too.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's be honest. They've been tricking people for years.
Yep.
At any rate, it's just not even there. It just happens. Boom.
You get
synced. We're syncing. And if you don't like it, oops.
Yeah.
The one thing that I will say right up front is the best way to deal with that, if it happens, don't uninstall OneDrive.
Okay.
Because if you uninstall the OneDrive app, it can do bad things to the data that it's already synced.
Locally?
Locally.
Oh, my goodness.
Technically, it could. I mean, probably won't, but do you want to take a chance?
So what would you recommend?
It's better to disconnect the account.
Gotcha. But you have to first delete the data that they put out there.
Well, the data that's out there would be whatever documents you had in your profile.
Right.
And that's why I'm kind of advising that you don't just get rid of the app.
Right.
What you want to do is just disconnect the account from the app.
Yeah. So after they do the sync automatically, go over and then disconnect it if you don't want it
to sync. Right. And you do that by using the little icon at the bottom right of the screen with the little cloudy thing.
Right.
And it's going to be blue.
Yeah.
And you right click on it, click settings, and then there should be an option to disconnect the account or unlink this PC.
Right.
The wording changes from time to time, but it'll be the same thing.
I mean, it's amazing. And then, of course, you have this article that just came out. Microsoft's AI boss thinks it's perfectly okay to steal content if it's on the open web, he calls it.
Oh.
Mustafa Suleiman has a curious understanding of copyright law on the web. So basically, if you're an AI, all you're doing in AI is trying to grab as much data and try to train your AI as much as you can. And where do you get that? Well, according to Mustafa Suleiman, part of the AI boss at Microsoft, he seems to believe that the moment you publish anything on the open web, it becomes freeware that anyone can freely copy and use. So basically, I guess CNBC Andrews Ross Sorkin asked him whether AI companies have effectively stolen the world's IP And he said, I think that with respect to content that's already on the open web, the social contract, thanks, there's social contracts, huh, of the content since 1990 has been that it's fair use.
What?
Did you know it was fair use there, Dennis?
Anyone? Wait a minute. Are you telling me the copyright law changed magically, drastically, and universally in 1990?
That's what he's saying. Anyone can copy it, recreate it, and reproduce it, and that it has been freeware, if you like, and that's been the understanding. Now, this comes from a company, Microsoft, whose Bing search engine used Google. For results, remember? Early on? They were like that. So that is how Microsoft's operated since the beginning. Well, Google's on the web. I guess it's freeware. I'll put a little Bing template over top and we'll use Google's results when you search. So yes, that's what they think over at Microsoft. All your bases belong to us, which if you have any idea what that is, I hope you're chuckling. when it comes to Microsoft, all your data belong to us. And this is, again, they're syncing it to the cloud. I'm sure the EULA might also say, by the way, we can have our AI read all your stuff, right? We're going to sync it whether you like it or not, and then we're going to read it whether you like it or not. Now, I don't know if that's the case, but I wouldn't put it past them and do it, considering this is the culture of Microsoft.
Yeah.
All of the web is freeware?
All of the web is freeware, and it's all for them to exploit for their own profit and not share a penny of it with you.
That's true. The social contract. Isn't that nice? I didn't know we had a social contract with Microsoft.
I love this.
Yeah.
But if you manage somehow to get your hands on their software and try to use it without paying them.
Oh, they'll, yeah.
Oh, they'll come after you.
Turn it right off.
So on the one hand, they will enforce their intellectual property rights to the fullest extent they can.
Right.
On the other hand, they don't think that you have any intellectual property rights at all.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's a one-sided relationship.
We'll put these links up here on computertalkwithtab.com, and we will see what we can talk. You know, anything you want to talk about when it comes to that will be out there for you as well. But it's just becoming more and more apparent that, as we all thought it would, right? When you get on the cloud, you get on the internet. I don't think we all thought that they would use their AI, our data, to train their AI. I don't think that came to mind, but that's what they're doing. So with a guy like Mustafa Suleiman out there, you need some lawyers. In this case, I go against my saying of how many lawyers you need in the legislature, but you need some lawyers in this case to say, buddy, no, you can't do that. And there's actually a video of him on X talking about it, that if you expressly stated on your website that you would not want to have any of your data scraped and only use or crawled and only use it to be part of search engines, then there's a gray area. He called it a gray area. And you see so many people post these things on Facebook. I do not give Facebook the right to use my pictures and stuff. I'm like, the moment you put the thing up there, guys, you gave them the right to use it.
Yeah, those little legal things aren't even really a thing at all.
No, but in this case, if you put something on the interwebs, Microsoft feels it's freeware, or this guy does. So I guess, you know, we can start putting a bunch of nonsense out there and you're going to end up with glue on your pizza. Oh, we already did that.
Or maybe I can post a website that says over and over again, Microsoft stinks.
Have the AI learn that. too funny. Let's get to some calls. We have some time. We're going to go to Joe in Berlin first. What's going on, Joe? What's happening?
Good morning.
Morning.
The other day I tried to open up a spreadsheet.
Yep.
And I get a message. You need a new app to open this MS Excel link.
Hmm. How old's your Excel program?
It was 2019.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that should work.
So you need a different app. What's the extension on the file you're trying to open?
Yeah. I can. They've got the new Microsoft 365.
Mm-hmm.
It's using the basic thing. I'm not paying a rent or all that.
Okay.
And I had a problem a year or so ago with trying to get Outlook, and I reinstalled the software, and then they say you got that already, and then I was able to use Outlook. Now, I can pull up a Word document.
Yep.
I don't get that message, just on Excel.
What was the extension of the type of file you're opening? Is it, do you know what the extension is? Because maybe it's not an Excel file.
No, it's an Excel file. Actually, I'm just trying to open up a blank Excel file.
Oh, to start a new one.
Right.
Interesting. I wonder.
I actually looked this up, and there are several people that report this.
Oh.
And for most of them, the problem is the file association with an XLS file or an XLSX file.
Has been broken or needs to be reestablished? Either
the file association just isn't there for whatever reason. And there are instructions on how to, well, I found a tech support article that mentions how to fix it.
Okay.
Tells you how to go in and set that file association.
Now he's doing it. Are you doing it within the program or outside the program?
I just click on the Windows button at the far left on my computer.
Yep.
Then it brings up 365.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just press on the workbook to try to open a new workbook.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I'm seeing in this tech support article. Somebody did exactly that.
You're not associated.
And you got to change your associations. But we can post a link to this, and it's just a few steps.
Isn't that kind of funny, though, that you would think the operating system of Microsoft would be able to know the extension of the file is associated with Excel by default? You would think that of all the things, you wouldn't have to manually or associate it or reassociate it because it got broke. You would think that the operating system would say, hey, wait a minute, this thing smells like an Excel file. I probably should associate Excel with it. No, they can't help you out there.
Well, right. And you know what? When you install Office on a computer that has Outlook in it, it doesn't change your default email client.
Right. Yeah.
Microsoft is not even self-aware.
Right. And we're not talking about intelligence. We're just talking about programming.
Right. Right.
I just installed Outlook, so I would think you'd want – would you think you might want me to use it? That's my default. So that's what's going on here. You need to reassociate it, and we'll put a link up there for you.
Yeah, like I said, it's just a few steps. It's pretty easy. But
when
it comes to the file associations, you want to set both XLS and XLSX files with Excel. When you go through those steps, do both of those file types, okay? And they should be right with each other in the list anyway.
Okay, thank you very much.
You got it, Joe. All right, so there we are, helping another person use the Microsoft tool because Microsoft won't help you do it for you.
I know.
You can't make it up. I mean, again, it's supposed to make your life easier, not harder. But.
And the fix for it had to come from some random guy who responded to a forum post on their website.
It's crazy.
I don't even think it's a Microsoft employee.
You can't even make it up. So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. And we are commercial-free thanks to GoNetSpeed. Everything we posted is going to go over to ComputerTalkWithTab.com. That is the name of the show.com, which also works. If you follow us on Facebook, if you're part of the Computer Talk with Tab listener network, we are broadcasting live there, and the links will go there thanks to Mike G. And he'll post everything to X over at Tab Computer Sys if you follow us on X. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of buffering videos and slow downloads? Say goodbye to frustration and hello to lightning-fast high-speed fiber internet from GoNetSpeed. At GoNetSpeed, we're on a mission to put slow internet to sleep for good. That's why we work so hard to give you the fastest, most reliable internet connection with speeds up to 2 gigabits per second. Along with our free router and installation, GoNetSpeed is the better choice for high-speed internet. Make the switch today. Visit GoNetSpeed.com for pricing and availability.
All right, we are back. Woo-hoo. And thanks to GoNetSpeed, we are back, commercial free.
Thank you very much.
We do appreciate that and hope you do as well. So along with low internet prices in the state of Connecticut, thanks to GoNetSpeed offering competition, they're helping you out with your geek show. So feel free to get online, 860-522-9842. And we're happy to chat with you about anything you want to talk about when it comes to technology. We'll do our best to answer your question or at least send you down the right direction.
We'll try.
The complaint department. Carolyn will take the complaints. You can call the hotline there at 860-522-9842 if you have any complaints about whatever we told you. Let's go to Ken in Windsor first. Hey, Ken, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I've got a couple of issues that I want to talk about.
Sure.
And I'm not sure this is really in your wheelhouse, but,
right.
You know, I was bumping up against my limit on Google Photos,
yep.
where they wanted to increase my monthly fee. So I figured, okay, I'll buy a hard drive and I'll just get them, keep them locally. Well, I started going through the process of seeing how you download them, and they have some software online. It's called Takeout, I guess, Google.com.
All right.
But, you know, when you pull the stuff down, though, there's some changes to it or some things missing. Like, well, okay, some of the photos, if you look at them in Google Photos, they will show you the location where the photo was taken. It will show you on a map where it was taken.
Yeah, the metadata.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some of my files evidently don't have that in the original EXIF file, I guess.
Okay.
And Google must figure out where the photo was taken from some other data from the phone, like they track location.
So maybe
even though it shows it when I'm looking at them in Google Photos, when I download them, it doesn't show a location. There's no GPS coordinates.
Well,
in the
metadata. You may not be able to read it with that tool they're showing you, but you should be able to read that metadata with another program because the metadata is embedded in the file. That's why it's called metadata.
Well, yeah, but he's saying the EXIF data is not in the file.
And that's what he's saying, but he's using the Takeout tool to look at it.
Well, yeah, here's a question. What tool are you using to look at the EXIF data?
I'm just using in Microsoft. They go to properties.
Oh, you might not see it there.
Right,
that's the problem.
See,
yeah.
You got to use the right tool. I highly doubt that they would strip out the metadata because that's everything Google wants to know about you. When you took it.
I mean, you can see, because you can see like what the camera was, what the camera settings were, and all
right.
that. So do you have a good tool that I can download to?
Yeah, I'm going to look for one here for you.
I mean, Carmen used to always talk about Photoshop Elements as a great tool.
Yeah, that'll show it.
I have Photoshop Elements on my computer.
There it is.
Look in Photoshop Elements, load the picture, and then look in the properties of it.
Yeah. There's no way they're stripping it out. And there's no way they're adding more effort to like within the cloud to use location data to say, I think this picture was taken at this time and place. That would be too much work. It's easier to just tag it in the file.
Yeah.
There is another piece of software that's also photo viewing that I know will read EXIF data, and that's called XNView. And we can post a link to that.
Yeah, but he's got Elements, so that should do it.
Yeah.
This is a smaller program, and it might be simpler to get if you're just looking for that, it'll help you because it will show you thumbnails for all of the photos in a directory, and then you can right-click on them and then look at the EXIF data right in there.
Gotcha.
I just think it's a quicker path to get what he wants.
Yep.
Okay. Well, one of the other curious things that Microsoft does, when these files come down, you know, like I have a photo that was taken in 2013.
Yep.
But when it gets into Microsoft on my computer and I look at the data for the files, it says the creation date for the file is 1979. And, man, we didn't have any of this stuff back in 1979.
That must be some kind of a default date that gets embedded.
That makes no sense.
Probably from the camera that took the picture.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
The camera software you were using.
But in the modification date, it does show like June of 2024.
Right.
Okay.
So if I just do a simple download, if I take one photo, I don't use the Takeout.
Yep.
It does have the creation date and the modification date, June of 2024. So it handles it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is an issue, especially when you create it on the file on the actual hard drive of your computer. It's going to have the date you copied it.
Yeah, I would think that it should, but
79, yeah.
Mm. That date has to be coming, well, I don't know.
Couldn't
Where
tell you.
Where would that come from?
No, it has to be the takeout people.
Well, it's either takeout itself or it was the software that created the photo file in the first place. Mm-hmm. Whatever the camera software was, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Were you able to clear off your space so that you can now take more pictures?
I have not done it yet. It's kind of nice because it gives you, I'm going to do it by year, and it goes pretty quickly.
Yep.
I got a lot of trash in there too, and I don't know if I should just stay online and trash all the photos I don't want or wait till I get them here. But I got to do something right now with some to keep me from bumping over the limit.
Yeah. I would think that if you don't have so many trash files that it would take you hours to clean them up, that would probably be a good place to start.
Yeah.
And then from then on, you have a repository of valuable photos, and then you can work with them, you know, from that point.
Also,
I don't know. It just seems the way to go.
Keep in mind, too, that there is no guarantee that Google will keep your files. They could, at any point, you could lose them.
True.
So there's actually backup technologies out there that we offer to our business clients because of the you have to back up the software as a service. So don't assume those files are going to be out there forever. They could disappear. Google has lost data, has happened plenty of times. So if there is anything important, you should back them up. And what you're doing by taking them down is kind of a backup. You're putting them on a removable media. That way you won't lose them. But just because they're out there in the cloud doesn't mean they're going to be there forever.
Hey, I've got a quick question for you on laptops.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to replace mine because the keyboard doesn't work on it anymore. And I always use an external keyboard anyway.
Yep.
And a secondary monitor. But now, evidently the new laptops now have chips for AI in them. And should I not buy a closeout laptop from last year? Should I look for one today that has the best AI support in it?
AI is still so new as far as what we're going to get with this. I would tell you to get the current system, you know?
Yeah.
Well, actually, not all of the computers will have the AI processor. I agree with Eric. Probably best to stick with the Intel world.
Yeah.
Go with an i5 or i7 or i9 processor.
Current generation.
13th gen
or
now,
better.
Or better.
Yeah.
And then go from there.
Yeah.
Because buy any of these new AI chip powered computers, you're getting in on the ground floor of bleeding edge technology. And when I use the word bleeding, it means something.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to get cut.
Yeah, I'm going to be an early joiner, right? And there's going to be issues. And I'm not that kind of guy. I like to go with the mature technology.
Yeah, we do too.
The last time I bought a computer was years ago, and it has so many features that I love. But the one feature I always couldn't get along with was the keyboard. So I don't want to buy anything mail order. I want to go put my hands on it. You know,
they still have some.
Important thing.
There's still a couple of places that you can go and actually put your hands on them these days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, great show, guys.
Thanks,
I enjoy it very much.
All right. And good luck. Good luck with your files.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
All right. Let's go on to who's up here next? Bob in Hebron. What's going on, Bob?
Morning, guys.
Morning.
My question is, fairly recently, my computer has developed a mouse sensitivity to clicking in certain things, like in the file manager, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's clicking when you don't want it to click?
No. It's like, let's say I'm going through something in a browser.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to click through page by page. Mm-hmm. And it'll jump two pages. Mm. Or if I am in File Manager and I click on something and I just want to like move it, it'll actually it'll act as though I double clicked on it.
Okay.
It'll actually open the file.
Yeah.
That
That's a setting.
So this seems like it happened, the best I can tell, it happened gradually then suddenly.
Yeah. There's probably a setting. You can set your mouse to do these types of things. You can go to the mouse configuration, and you can set the mouse to act. I'm pretty certain that you push one click and can act as a double click. It all depends on the configurability of your mouse, or your mouse is going, or you have a tremor.
Definitely possible.
You're vibrating too much coffee.
It's that time of the calendar.
So most likely you want to go to your mouse, your pointer device configuration, and see if you've somehow modified a single click into act as a double click.
You might also check the double click speed setting.
Yeah, there you go.
You might have it set to a very low value so that it's detecting a double click when there isn't really one.
Right.
Okay.
I've had to change fingers. My pointer finger is completely destroyed, so now I have to use the next finger over there, the middle finger, to actually do anything with the scroll because my fingers are getting destroyed by this mouse. Who can I sue?
Yeah, I hear that. the other question is something that I think I heard you say on a show a while back, and mm-hmm. It was because I shut down all my computers every single night.
Yeah.
But it was that log out of your account before you shut down?
Well, no. I mean, your account will log you out as you shut down, and it'll take care of that for you automatically.
All right. Then I just misheard.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, thanks very much. I'll try those. And love the show. You guys are always great.
Thanks.
We'd be lost without you.
We'd be lost without you guys, Colin.
Yeah.
We'd be talking about our kids and his cats. We don't want to do that.
Sounds like we're going around in a circle.
Maybe.
Exactly. Thanks, Bob.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. But yeah, I mean, without you guys calling in over the past 30 years, occasionally there's a drought where we fixed all the issues, but it's Microsoft, so we're fine. Let's go on to Ralph in West Hartford. Hey, Ralph.
Howdy, boys.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
I'm calling you on my landline.
Ah.
So here's where you can make your baby boomer joke.
Nope. No jokes.
It's a little off topic, but it's about the fact that Frontier is going to take away my copper wire.
Yep.
And they are bombarding me with phone calls and letters that I better switch to fiber optic or else. And there's a teaser rate. If they say if I switch, it'll be $40 a month for 1 year. There's the rub. After a year, God knows what it'll go up to, so I don't want to do that. I just want to know what you guys think. Any advice? I like having a second phone line, and I like having my copper wire landline, but it's going to go away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to go away. Copper's going away.
And fiber is not bad to have.
It's not.
It's about the price. It's like $40 for the first year. Okay, that's great. But after the first year, they won't tell me what it's going to go up to, and you can imagine.
So here's the thing, Ralph. You're in West Hartford, and GoNetSpeed is in West Hartford.
And can I get a landline with GoNetSpeed? See, I don't want a VoIP. I want a good old-fashioned landline.
No one's putting in copper. They're all putting in glass.
There's a reason Frontier is changing you from copper to fiber.
Yeah.
Even if they give you a phone and they call it a landline,
it's emulated. It isn't.
It's still running over VoIP.
Right.
Right. So I know I'm a dinosaur. I want to keep the old one. And I would switch to them. I mean, I already have my internet and television through evil Comcast.
Mm.
So I don't really need the Frontier router that they're going to give me. And right. That teaser rate of $40, you know, by the second year, it could be $200 a month, and they won't tell me. One of them accidentally spilled the beans and said, oh, well, after the first year, we're going to charge you $25 for the telephone. So there's $65 a month, and, you know, who knows how high it can go.
Right.
So that's why I don't want it. And it's such a hard sell. I mean, I get all these junk calls from them,
and
I get a letter every week. I mean, they're really pushing it.
Well, if you get fiber on your site, you're not going to get rid of it, right? And there's a competitor in the neighborhood. So check out GoNetSpeed, see what their price is for fiber. And so if you really want your second line, your second number, you can use Google Voice and make that number a free Google Voice over IP number if you really want that numbered. And you can have it ring on phones. You can use UMA if you want, have set up UMA for that line. Or you can say, you know what, I have a cell phone that works. So get rid of that line. I don't know how to say it more plainly, but you don't need it.
Let me throw my wife under the bus. She's the Luddite, and she doesn't like cell phones. She only likes the landline.
My wife's a Luddite too, but I convinced her finally because she had that. We had that second line connect up to an answering machine, and our doctors would be calling, leaving voicemails there, and we'd never get them because we wouldn't even listen to it. And so
that Google thing, is that an app I can put on my phone?
Google Voice is a voice service that you can port your phone number over to, and then when people call that number, you're going to tell Google Voice to forward it to your cell phone, right? It's not even an app. They're just going to forward the call to your cell number. You don't have to do any apps or anything. You're going to say, my landline, which is, you know, 860-whatever, please forward it to my cell number. So now if you really want to use that number, people can call it and forward it to both your numbers if you want. You can make it ring both numbers at the same time.
Will the phone number go away when Frontier stops using the copper?
The phone number is, you're going to port it away from Frontier. So Frontier will lose that number to Google.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Google Voice. Thank you for that. That's why I knew you guys would have some kind of alternative. But I still want my landline. I'm a baby boomer.
Sorry, Ralph. But check out GoNetSpeed too, because they're keeping those prices down, and they're going to offer you a better internet service anyway. So
yeah, one of these days I'm going to cut that evil Xfinity Comcast cord. But right now I'm too lazy.
All right, man. You could take your wife out maybe twice a week more often if you did it.
if she's listening. Boys.
Yep.
Thank you.
Oh, you got it, Ralph. Bye. Yeah, you're paying that cost for TV. You know, it's crazy how much we spend on that. So, yeah, I mean, I know you guys want to keep your copper lines, but the equipment that is being used, the switching technology that's being used to maintain those copper lines is kind of going away and it's being replaced with fiber. And so the fiber companies figure that if they ran the fiber line too, because fiber pretty much will be the last line ever being run to your home, a hardwired line. It's going to be fiber, right? The other next alternatives will be wireless. But that last line, these companies are all fighting to get your business and get your house connected. So that's why they're pushing so hard. Because if that line is there, it's going to be unlikely that you're going to run another line. Unless, again, fiber is becoming much more easy to install. So, I mean, I've never done it. It takes microscopes to do the splicing. I know. But these companies want to get you there. So, let's continue on here. I think I can grab this call. We got Betty out there in West Hartford who's got a question about landlines too. Hey, Betty.
Hey, yeah, I'm actually in the car driving, but I heard the baby boomer from West Hartford. And I'm the same kind of situation. I had a line phone, and I had the line phone because it's like an extra step. But you had a joke a while back. You said, well, if you're the only one with a line phone, and there's a disaster or something, who are you going to call?
That's true.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's my question. Mm-hmm. There was a wonderful tech from Frontier putting in, replacing the copper. And I said, why are you doing that? And he totally told me why.
Yeah.
And I totally understood that. It's easier than for them to, am I talking too loud? I am in the car.
No, you're fine.
Okay. So he said, it's easier to find the break, you know? And then he said, how about security? And he said, you'll know if someone taps your phone because there'll be a stop or something like that. He says, like a line beam. So that sounded pretty cool.
It's kind of weird that he said that too. But yeah,
I'm sorry?
It's kind of weird that he said, you'll know if someone's tapping your phone.
Well, because I asked him.
Oh, okay.
I said, because I use my line phone for making quote-unquote secure calls, which what are they? They are not to foreign countries. That's a joke if anyone's listening.
Yeah.
It's to my banking institute.
Yeah. So the beauty, so copper could be impacted by water, just rain. I mean, how many issues have we seen with that? The tapping and all that, when you're voice over IP, a lot of this stuff can actually be encrypted too. So,
yeah, I know, but you're talking to a baby boomer who is a slow learner when it comes to the computer world, and I needed to be out there for 50 more years. So here's my question to you, because I'm probably going to hang on for it a little bit longer.
All right.
But a friend of mine who was also in another town in Connecticut was told they need to put in another modem, and then there's a battery for backup.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if, you know, I'd have to do that, but it sounds like I'm getting a lot of modems into my house.
Right, because you have to emulate the copper. When they put the fiber line in there, they're going to have it go over fiber and then emulate a plain old telephone line, and it requires a device to do that.
And it won't interfere with my GoNetSpeed that I have presently in my...
Well, if you have that, just call GoNetSpeed and they'll give you the line already. You don't need to work with two different companies. You can port. That's the other thing that people don't get. You can port. Your number is not owned by the provider of your service. It they just use it, right? And so GoNetSpeed can port it away and they can offer you dial tone if you want to do it that way.
That's a good. Now, that's just. And this is one more question, then I'll go off the line because I want to hear about your kids and cats.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I have found. And I could be wrong. I have found that when there's, you know, inclement weather, that your cell phone doesn't work so hot or your computer doesn't work so hot.
No.
However, my line phone works.
So, no. So your cell phone doesn't care when it rains and your computer doesn't care when it rains. That I can tell you.
But why don't they work so well?
There's a joke in there. I'm going to say it's user error because it really doesn't care if it rains.
Oh, you know, you're so cute. You're making me feel better. So when I see, when I'm trying to make that phone call out, like in the tornado warnings, and I'm sending a text because texts apparently are easier to go.
Yeah.
I get just a swirling, and the person I'm trying to reach doesn't receive my text. So it's my error.
It could be the network's error, right? So in an emergency, you could have a lot of usage.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Whatever cell tower you're connected to might be saturated with other people doing stuff.
Right.
It might also have some kind of bandwidth management taking place where some of its bandwidth is now being directed toward emergency services,
right,
such as your town or the state. And there's only just so much of it for consumers like you with your cell phones.
And it's just so you know.
Just for that moment.
You guys are awesome.
This happened, though, even in the 80s. All circuits are busy now. Please try your call again. All circuits are busy
now.
Same idea.
And you guys, you are great. But when someone downloads this conversation, I think what you're also saying is that we do need different systems, not based on the cell tower, because in an emergency, we're not going to get anything. It's going to be saturated. So we need other ways of communication. And here's my joke.
Yeah.
I'm going to start learning the Morse code.
Sure. I mean, how many great movies have come by with Morse code? Heck, Star Trek used Morse code. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's my exit question, because I really want to hear about those cats.
Yeah.
And children. If I have Frontier put in another modem, would that possibly give me another cell tower so that I'm not using one tower, but I have an option just going to another?
Well, no. You're going to use that modem to be a emulated copper copper phone line. So that's going to go over their fiber network. So it means if your GoNetSpeed is having an issue, the other service will maybe be okay, but... It's very redundant. You really shouldn't have to do it. If you have a fiber service and a cell service, those are two separate services. You've already got that redundancy.
You know, I hear you. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you. But you kind of also said in that last comment to me, and you probably want to throw a dish at me now or something, or a dish of water. You know, you said the GoNetSpeed is going to one cell tower or whatever it's going to.
No. GoNetSpeed is fiber network, completely separate from your cell phones. Your cell phone
is
whatever.
Where's that going?
Are you using Verizon? Who are you using for your cell service?
I'm using. Am I using Verizon for my phone?
T-Mobile.
Yeah,
for your cell phone. What are you using?
T-phone.
T-Mobile.
Yeah, T-Mobile.
Yeah, so that's their network. GoNetSpeed has got their own network. So GoNetSpeed goes to, I can't remember what they're called, but there's some sort of prime internet connection that are all over the state. Their fiber connections go to those prime locations and you can go get your communication out. T-Mobile is completely different. They've got their own network going to their own prime hubs or whatever they're called. So you already have two. To add a third just seem very redundant.
Okay. That's understood.
All right. Sounds good. And we will never throw anything at you.
Well, that was a joke because I'm sitting here with my dog in the car and I use water to calm her down.
Oh, you do?
I have a spray bottle. Very nicely.
Very nice. I didn't know that worked. All right, Betty.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now she's saying goodbye.
Bye-bye. Right. Bye-bye. So Betty's going to decide if she wants a third network or not.
That's interesting. I wonder if we could do a virtual spray bottle. but no, those are all great questions. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. And if you ever want to catch the show at a different time, you can go ahead and subscribe to our podcast either through the Odyssey app or through whatever app you use to get podcasts, our Computer Talk with Tab podcast. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows out there. So you could pretty much spend the rest of your life listening to Geek Talk. We'll be right back.